The Wisconsin State Assembly passed a pair of bills last week that would effectively prohibit transgender girls and women from participating in women's sports at the high school and collegiate levels. The bill's language says athletes at the high school and college levels could only play on teams that match the gender they were assigned at birth. Governor Tony Evers has pledged to veto the bills, but the legislation has put Wisconsin in the center of a wider societal debate over the participation of transgender athletes in school sports. Our next guest has been covering transgender athletes and legislation around the country and digs into the story in a new book. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the bills in the state legislature on transgender athletes? How do you think school sports and sporting organizations should handle the participation of transgender athletes? What questions do you have? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Katie Barnes is a feature writer for ESPN who covers the intersection of sports and gender. Katie's new book is called Fair Play, How Sports Shape the Gender Debates. Katie, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
You start your book off with some terminology that'll come up in the discussion. Can you talk a little bit about what we mean when we say transgender, cisgender, and when we distinguish between gender identity and, as laws sometimes do, sex assigned at birth?
Yeah, so your sex assigned at birth is, as easy as I can sum it up, is what is designated on your birth certificate. So when a baby is born, somebody writes on a birth certificate M or F for male or female, and that's your sex assigned at birth. Your gender identity is how you internally identify yourself from a gender perspective. And sometimes your gender identity and your sex assigned at birth is in alignment, and that describes what we would call someone as cisgender, cis meaning same. Right. So it speaks to that alignment. And then someone who is transgender is someone whose gender identity does not match their sex assigned at birth, trans meaning across. So that is where transgender comes from.
Now, in your book, you write, looking at the debates over who can participate in sports, I'm going to quote here, "What began as a good faith discussion about policy and physiological differences between sexes has given way to a level of intolerance and discrimination that is simply unconscionable." And Katie, that's happened pretty much since over the time that it's taken you to report on this and write this book. How have you seen this issue change from, as you say, a good faith discussion to a hot button divisive issue?
So I think it's important to note that for a lot of folks, that, you know, the idea of transgender athletes feels like a very new question. This feels like a very new issue and something that emerged out of nowhere. And I sympathize with that perspective personally. However, for over a decade, there have been folks who've been working on policy and thinking about how policy should be applied to a variety of levels of sport when it comes to eligibility for transgender athletes. When I say transgender athletes, I do mean transgender girls, I mean transgender boys, as well as a wide range of folks who have gender expansive identities, who are non-binary, genderqueer, and who push against, you know, the binary construction of our sporting apparatus that exists, which is boys and girls, men's and women's sports, right? And so over time, you know, there was that discussion that was happening already from a policy perspective. But in the last 5 years, that issue has become increasingly politicized. And in 2020, the first law passed in Idaho, HB 500, that specifically restricted transgender girls' ability to participate in girls' sports. And then now, of course, we're up to 23 states, with Wisconsin being a state that is currently considering this, as well as Ohio. So it is something that has become quite politicized, very divisive. And, you know, speaking to the passage of Fair Play that you read, for me as a reporter, I have seen the tenor of discussion change, where, you know, the breadth of the laws is quite significant. And so when you were describing the legislation that is being considered in Wisconsin, right, you mentioned that it affected high school sports and college sports. Well, the bill that affects school sports actually does not make a distinction between high school, middle, or elementary schools. And in fact, is written to be quite broad, and it doesn't make a distinction between competitive sports at the school level or intramural and club sports. It actually goes out of its way to enumerate specifically club and intramural sports, and the college bill does the same. So the type of competition that is being discussed has really widened. It's not just about what is fair from a competitive standpoint, which is, I think, where folks started in this conversation, and has really moved to a place where all type of participation is being targeted for restriction.
Dr. Katie Barnes, author of the new book, Fair Play, How Sports Shape the Gender Debates. Republican State Representative Barbara Dietrich of Oconomowoc co-authored the bills we're talking about, told an assembly committee earlier this month that the legislation is, quote, not a matter of transphobia or hate, end quote, but about protecting women's sports. Here's a listen.
By biological males being permitted to play on women's teams because of gender identity, biological females are once again losing opportunities at titles, scholarships, and even participation. Additionally, by ignoring the scientific biological fact that males have higher bone density, greater muscle mass, and often greater height, women are being put in physical danger of greater injury in competition.
The representative there summing up what you spend many chapters of the book tackling a couple different points there. First of all, from that quote, scientific biological fact there. What did you find when you started digging into concerns about fairness in this way, of physical fairness in sport?
Yeah, so I think the first thing that I would say is that when it comes to physiological differences between typical folks who are assigned male at birth and typical folks who are assigned female at birth, those are present. There is a performance gap after testosterone-driven puberty that we see, meaning that the fastest woman in the world is not nearly as fast as the fastest man in the world. You will not hear me dispute that. However, when it comes to the science around transgender athletes specifically and transgender athletes at a variety of ages, we know considerably less. And specifically about transgender girls. And so what I mean by that is there have been a handful of studies that have looked at really athletic output for transgender girls and women, predominantly transgender women. However, you know, athletic output is not the same as athletic performance for athletes. And also, I think what is important about this discussion is all of the things that we tend to talk about when it comes to the physiological differences in our elite athletes, like bone density and VO2 max and femur length, and you know whether or not you have double joints, which can aid flexibility in swimming, or webbed toes, et cetera, et cetera. These things that we focus on, we describe, you know, particularly elite athletes. We like to focus on them because our elite athletes are physiologically exceptional. That's the whole point. That's why they are elite athletes. When we look at the athletic participation and experiences of the rest of us who are not elite athletes, which is the overwhelming majority of athletes at the school level, 96% of them do not go on to play any level of college sports. Those athletes don't know their testosterone levels. They probably don't know their VO2 max. That is a level of scientific scrutiny that we do not place onto youth sports for a variety of reasons. And so the fact that it's being done now in the name of restrictive policy and law that is meant to be broadly restrictive, I think calls into question why such laws are being passed to begin with. I don't dispute that girls and women do not have the opportunities that they are, that should be afforded to them under the law. But that is not a question of a handful of transgender athletes in each state. It is a question of why we're not investing in girls and women's sports when they are entitled to that based on Title IX. And so to me, those are two separate questions. But from a science perspective, I think it's considerably less settled than folks would like it to be. And that's why I spent a whole chapter on it. It's very hard to sum up in a succinct soundbite, so I do apologize for that. That's kind of the nature of the beast, as it were. But I do encourage folks to read it. It's chapter 5. So it's right there for you.
And also in that clip, and you were starting to touch on it there, the idea that, okay, the cisgender girl in sports, maybe that high school hopeful going on to college, or that college competitor hoping to win national titles, is seeing unfair competition, again, from that quote from the representative, losing opportunities at titles, scholarships, and even participation. As you mentioned, We have, I think, a handful of cases in the courts and things like that to point to. How big an issue has this been?
From a systemic perspective, it's not an issue. And so what I mean by that is, yes, there are examples of transgender athletes, in specifically transgender girls, who have had a championship level success. Primarily, folks want to point to Connecticut as the example of this. And it is true, in Connecticut, from the years 2017 to 2020, there were two transgender girls who ran track at the high school level and won a number of championships. Neither of them received scholarships to compete in college. Neither of them went on to compete.
We're talking to ESPN feature writer Katie Barnes, author of the new book Fair Play, How Sports Shape the Gender Debates. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Is this an important issue to you? Do you want to see states legislate when it comes to transgender participation in sports? If so, at what level? What would you like to see happen? Do you think it's become overblown in the political landscape? If you or a loved one is transgender, love to hear how you're feeling about these issues. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Katie Barnes, feature writer for ESPN, with us today to discuss their reporting in their new book, Fair Play, How Sports Shape the Gender Debates. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think there should be different rules for transgender athletes? If so, at what levels of sports do you think they should be there? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Katie, in your book, toward the end, you, I think, somewhat reluctantly suggest your policy solutions, or at least suggestions, I think it's fair to say. And it varies depending on the level of the sport, the stakes of the sport. Can you give us an overview of how you're thinking about how we regulate transgender athletes and their participation in sports at different levels?
Yes, you would be right. It was quite reluctant. I wrote myself into a corner and just had to deal with it.
So I had to ask about it too. Yeah.
It's okay. Journalists do. They love to ask me that question. So I would say, for me, I think of it at, you're right, in the different competitive levels of sport, stakes are really important. So in school sports, meaning K through 12, I don't think any restrictions need to happen. From a scientific perspective, it's not a systemic issue. Even in, when we're looking at when we're looking at post-puberty participation, for me, it's an issue of morally and philosophically, I simply cannot get to a place where I think it's appropriate to require minors to medicate in order to participate in school sports. That's something I can't get there for, and that's why I lay out that position. That includes, of course, club-level sports, as well as just recreational sports at all levels, including adults. There's just really no need for any kind of a restriction, simply because the stakes are not there. For college, that, my opinion on that extends to Division III. Again, no scholarships, no money, no stakes. Same thing with club, and which is basically pay to play in college, as well as intramural level sports, which are just recreational. There's no stakes. There's really no need for restriction. At competitive Division I and Division II, there are scholarships. There is money. There are higher stakes. And so there's a, I would consider that to be elite athletics. And so there's a question of what types of restriction are appropriate. For me, a path to participation is the most important thing. It is, there's no, in my opinion, scientific reason for any kind of blanket ban or restriction for transgender girls and women in the women's category at any level. Restriction is fine in terms of requiring some type of testosterone suppression, but you know, whatever those hoops are, someone needs to be able to jump through them. And then at the Olympic level, same thing. You know, restrictions are okay, but they need to be able to be met. A blanket restriction or ban is not appropriate to me. I think the place where this gets messiest is in club sports that are youth focused and feeders to Olympic programs. So we do send Olympians who are in their teens to compete in swimming, in gymnastics, all of those things. That is where I think this is a messy question. But I also think it's pretty clear if you're a teenager and possibly Olympic tracked. So some type of restriction would be appropriate there as well. But the specifics of those policies, that's beyond my pay grade, but that's generally what I think.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Margaret is with us in Jackson. Margaret, hello.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. So, Katie, I'm sorry, I had a little trouble listening to the whole radio show because I'm distracted over here, so you may have answered this, but if you narrow the group to the elite category that you were talking about, it still seems to me that the transgender people would have an advantage over women, transgender women, I should say, over just women because of the fact that they've had those years of the longer bones, possibly, or the bigger muscle mass. And so that doesn't seem to be, you know, a fair thing. But maybe you were just talking about that with not being able to narrow down, you know, what would be the rules.
Margaret, thanks a lot for the call. And you talk about that a little more in the book, Katie. Some international sports organizations are trying to split that and say, hey, if you've gone through puberty as a boy, basically, and developed testosterone as a boy, then you would be out in those certain sports.
Yeah, there are. So World Athletics, World Aquatics, and the Cycling Federation have all passed really restrictive policy that is essentially says that if you've gone through early stage puberty, testosterone-driven puberty, you will not be eligible to compete in any elite events period ever in those sports. However, there will be an athlete someday who meets that restriction and it should be eligible to compete. And my question is, well, would that be okay? Would she be allowed to win to participate in the women's category? And there are some folks who would answer no to that question. I think where we are from a policy perspective is, while I do think that there are some folks who ask questions and who are seeking to understand and seeking fairness, there are also some folks who see transgender girls and women participating in women's sports at any level at any time as a failure of policy. And so those are kind of, that's a little sticky. In terms of the specific question that was asked around elite sports, my answer to that is it depends on a lot. Each athlete brings their own levels of physiological advantages and disadvantages, financial advantages and disadvantages to each sport that they play. And so when it comes to sports that really rely on speed, strength, and power, the amount of time post-testosterone-driven puberty and then also the effect of testosterone suppression on athletic performance is important. My point is that we don't have great data on that. I think a lot of folks think that the data is someplace where it is not. And so it's important to think about that. We also know that testosterone suppression does work to a certain degree. There are some things that cannot be undone. For example, your skeletal structure cannot be reversed. However, just because an athlete retains grip strength, a certain level of grip strength, I should say, which one study says that that is possible, that doesn't mean that that athlete should be banned from competing in soccer, right? And so the way that we treat team sports perhaps is different than how we treat individual sports. My point is that a blanket ban, even at the elite levels, on all transgender girls and women from participating after testosterone-driven puberty in the women's category is not scientifically sound because each of these sports are different. And also, you know, athletics and sports are skills. It takes a tremendous amount of training and of access, including financial access, to develop those skills. And I think sometimes when we focus on biology pretty much, you know, exclusively, we have an incomplete conversation. And my belief is that we should have a more complete one and have the courage to approach this conversation with nuance, especially when it's difficult.
Thanks for that call, Margaret. Talking to Katie Barnes, author of the new book, Fair Play, How Sports Shape the Gender Debates. Katie, moving from the physics of sports to the politics of it, you tell the story of how sort of rapidly this wave of transgender-related bills went from one state legislature to another, lawsuits and more, and caught a lot of people who had been thinking about these issues, as you said, for a long time, by surprise. Is that starting to change now, or are we starting to see more of a pushback against that?
Well, I think at this point in time, the folks who are organizing for LGBTQ equality broadly are no longer surprised by this legislation. However, it has taken a backseat to other more pressing legislation. And what I mean by that is that we know, statistically speaking, the number of transgender athletes competing in each state, including the states that have passed these laws, to be very small. So when the Utah governor vetoed their legislation, which was then overridden by the legislature, he did so, and in writing, saying that of the 75,000 high school athletes in the state, only 4 were transgender and 1 was a transgender girl. In Kentucky, there's 1 known transgender girl who was trying to play girl sports before the legislature overrode the governor's veto to then enact a restrictive law. And so we're talking about being able to count on one hand in each state the number of transgender athletes that would be affected by restrictive bills. But when it comes to healthcare, that affects all transgender youth in a state. All transgender youth need access to healthcare and to affirming care in whatever way that looks for them and their families and their doctors. And so that has become the focus of a lot of organizing efforts, even as more sports bills have continued to pass into law.
And briefly, as we wrap up, Katie, you grew up loving sports. You hope lots of kids do, especially for the younger age. I think you're approaching this from a place of let's get as many kids doing whatever sports they're willing to do as we can.
100%. Playing sports is so important and it's really fun. And I loved the Mighty Ducks growing up. And so to quote Gordon Bombay, games should be fun. And I really hope that in the coming years, we can get back to talking about sports as games and as fun opportunities for all of our kids, as opposed to focusing on how to limit certain numbers of them from being able to participate.
Katie, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Katie Barnes is a feature writer for ESPN who covers the intersection of sports and gender and the author of the book we've been talking about. It's called Fair Play, How Sports Shape the Gender Debates.